Okay, so my name is Garrett Serac, and I work at Microsoft in the Open Source Technology Center. I'm going to talk today about some of our visions for the future about open source on Windows and how we're going to help get things moving. So the eternal question, and this is actually something that a lot of people at Microsoft like to ask themselves, like, why do people run Linux? Why is that? Why are they doing that? And for a very long time, I don't think they actually thought about the real reason why people run Linux. And it turns out it's exactly the same reason why people run Windows. It is. It's exactly the same reason. It's applications. They're running an application. They're not running Linux. And okay, so there's a few people out there, a very few number, who are just running Linux to see it run. And ooh, it runs. But the vast majority of people are running Linux because it allows them to run an application. It's a means to an end. And especially in business, where it's like, well, the applications are what's driving your business. The only reason you're running the applications is because they make you money somehow. So then the question, of course, comes up, well, how do we get these people to actually run their software on Windows? How do we make it even possible? Well, get their applications onto Windows. The vast majority of open source software runs on other than Windows platforms, but given enough loving care, it's not very difficult to get an individual piece of software to run on Windows. Virtually, I would say 90% of the software can be cross-compiled in one way or another to run on Windows, and it's probably even higher than that. And so the trick, though, is actually making it so that users can get the access to these applications on Windows. And if we did that, and if we managed to get them to have that, then customers get to have a choice. So if there's a reason why they need to run a particular application, we're not forcing a platform upon them. We're saying you can choose whatever you want to run it on. So speaking from an open source developer's perspective, what do we want from an open source application on Windows? What is it that I desire to see? Or let's put it this way, as an open source developer, what are the things that make it mandatory for me to even get involved? So one, I want to actually be able to install open source applications. I want to be able to take an application and install it on Windows as if it was running, as if it was built for Windows, not some sort of, you know, really lousy interface. It should work as if it was built for Windows. I also want them to have the same benefits as other applications on Windows so that when I make a particular thing, it uses, you know, if there's hardware acceleration or whatever, these things should run on Windows the way they were intended, but again, built for Windows. And then the third thing, which I find extremely important, is the ability to build from source, and this is what I consider to be non-negotiable. It's not open source software if you can't actually build it. Now, a lot of open source software, like I said, if you work hard enough, you can get it to compile on Windows, and once you do so, you don't change whatever it is that you did because it's so darn hard to get there in the first place. So let's talk a little bit about application install experience on Linux. On Linux, you have things like shared libraries, where I have one copy of OpenSSL in the system, and every application that uses it uses the same copy of OpenSSL. The same goes for Zlib and about 100 or 200 other libraries, where one library is shared amongst many applications. If I port those applications to Windows, that isn't quite the same. When I install applications from, say, using Ubuntu or whatever, I get auto-dependencies from my application. So I go and install something, and it just installs all the things that it needs. As the end user, I really don't have to understand how that works or that it works. I just know that when I install Firefox, I get Firefox and everything that Firefox needs. When I install Apache, I get Apache and everything that it needs. There's a large selection of applications. On Ubuntu, you open up the Synaptic Package Manager, and the first thing you see is about 28,000 different things you can install. 28,000 things to install. And if I went through that list and I said, how many of these things, you know, if I tried really hard, could I get to run on Windows? A lot of them. The problem is, of course, there's no place to even find these things if I went looking for them. The applications themselves actually come from many different repositories. You don't know that when you're running the package manager. It just knows where to find them and where to download them from and where to get its other stuff from. The binaries can be signed, so you know who it is that actually compiled these things, so that you can trust that when you're actually using someone else's binary, you know who it is you're getting it from. It's kind of ridiculous to think that someone should ever run software where they don't know it came from. I mean, it's kind of in the spirit of open source. I'm not going to go ahead and run code that I don't know what it is. It's also easy to uninstall these things. Now, that sounds pretty trivial, but open source software on Windows sometimes doesn't uninstall very well. It's easy to find out what you have installed to enumerate them. They upgrade really, really nicely. When I install a new version of Apache, it just installs the new one, and it doesn't actually screw up all my configuration. The opposite is true on Windows. It doesn't work that way. It's very smart when it comes to the platform. It knows whether I'm using a 64-bit or 32-bit version, and there's even other benefits. So on Windows, the binaries are scattered. If you can find open-source applications on Windows, you're very, very lucky. They're not in the same place. There's not even a repository where you can say, find all of these things. If I want to install Apache and PHP and Python and maybe some plugin, I got to go searching the internet for these things. They're often out of date. They're never kept up to date. Well, I wouldn't say never, but they're so out of date often that it's very difficult to get things that are patched up right to the most recent code. When people do build these things, they're always trailing by at least a margin. The libraries, like I mentioned before, are never shared. If I install 5 open source applications on Windows that use OpenSSL, I guarantee you I get at least 5 copies of OpenSSL. Even commercial software uses these same libraries. If you go and look in the Acrobat folder, you'll find a copy of zlib and you'll find a copy of OpenSSL. Hey, you know, it's really great they're using that, but when I load things like Acrobat into the browser, which is a plugin, and then I load Flash or something else and about 3 or 4 other things, all these things end up in the same memory space, but they're using different versions of the shared libraries. And that's really, really bad. That's really bad for stability. And this is where some of the instability on the Windows platform comes from, when you start mixing and matching source or mixing and matching binaries when they should be sharing these libraries. There's no update facility, or when there is, what's the favorite way of doing that? Oh, let's stick another app in the tray. How many people got like 30 or 40 things in the tray? It's ridiculous. This is not the intended use of that area, is for updaters. We want one unified updating system. On Linux, this works just phenomenally. There is a very poor selection. Again, there's 28,000 packages on the Ubuntu when I install it that I can go ahead and grab right now. I don't think I could find those 28,000, all of them, even if they could compile. I know I can't find them. Now, the only bright star in this horizon right now is the web platform installer that Microsoft, the IIS team, has built. There's a few downsides to it. It's centrally run. That is that Microsoft has to actually add the different applications to it. It's really only for web applications and things that web applications need to run. And it's not standard. There's no common standards involved with it. It's basically a centrally located closed system. So this is one of my favorite quotes, actually. It comes from several years ago. Package management is the single biggest advantage that Linux has brought to the industry. It blurs the boundaries between operating systems and applications, and it makes it easier to push innovations into the marketplace and evolve the OS. This is said by Ian Murdoch, the Ian and Debian. And it's very true. This is how Linux has managed to move so quickly. This is a great thing, making it easy to install software and keep it up to date and keep moving and making sure that it all works. Sure, it's been a bumpy road, but it works pretty damn good now. Come on. So, problem number one is that Windows lacks an equivalent open source application install and management experience. Let's hold on to that one for a while. So let's talk a little bit about building from source on Linux. Virtually, using autoconf and the tools, which nobody actually really likes, but services the job well, compiling from source code on Linux is virtually the same for almost every open source app. Sure, it gets a little bit more complicated here and there, but generally the pattern is exactly the same. These same 5 commands. You untar a source tarball, you go into the directory, you unconfigure, you unmake, make install. That works for so much software that it's amazing. It's just fantastic. Of course, on Windows, we don't have autoconf because it's quite a different system. So the first question is, well, now what? What do we do? Can we build it? Can we fix it? And I tried looking at this for a very long time, and it occurred to me that this is probably not the best idea. And the reason is, because it's Windows and it's not Unix. Trying to put lipstick on a pig does not make it a more attractive pig. It's a different system. It's not intended to work exactly the same as Unix. And trying to make it work the exact same as Unix is very, very foolish. I mean, if I tried to say, let's say we wanted to make things work better on Linux and we slapped some sort of Win32 layer on top of the POSIX so that everybody would be a lot happier, it wouldn't go over very well. So the opposite is very true as well. So let me just quickly talk about how exactly you would go about compiling PHP from source on Windows, which is, sadly enough, very, very different than it is on Linux in some ways. So the first thing you have to do is actually go and download all of the dependencies that you need. There's about 20, 30 dependencies that you need in order to actually compile PHP. Well, that's not true. You have to go and find the dependencies first. These things are, again, not in a centralized location, not in a centralized place to go ahead and actually build from. Now, the community has actually started to collate them all into one single place, but there are a few problems with that as well. So you take all of these pieces, this source code, and for each one of them, you have to go through and try to figure out how to compile it. They're all different. Some of them have make files, some of them have project files for VC6, some for VC7, some for VC9, some they have them for GCC. It's ridiculous. And the trouble is that this is so darn hard that the vast majority of developers will just throw their hands up in the air and say, hell with it, I'm going to download somebody else's binary. Now, even if you manage to get it all to compile, which 20 hours is probably way too optimistic, having done it myself, it's still not great. And at the end, you go to compile PHP itself, and so it's got a batch file, which generates a configure.js JavaScript file, which turns around and generates a make file, which is a little weird when you think about it. So, okay, you managed to build that. That's great. You managed to go through all these steps. You squeezed out a binary. That's great. So now what? Well, unfortunately, the build process isn't optimal. So now, when I want to actually produce a higher optimized version using something like profile-guided optimization, which is a feature of Visual C++, which allows us to take some code and work with it, and then knowing how it's used, we can turn out a higher-performing binary, there's really no way to modify those existing build scripts to make that work, because they're not designed with that in mind. Now, that being said, I went through about 18 months ago, and I did this very thing. I actually built another JavaScript file, which basically automated everything from front to back and did all this work, just this really large script, built myself a whole other set of source dependencies, and then generated some build files from that and produced it. It runs for about an hour and a half, and it spits out this higher performing version of PHP. Hey, that's great, but that only worked for PHP, and really it only worked for that version, because when there was updates to go, it really didn't make it simpler to do the next time. However, I did learn a lot. So back to AutoConf for a moment. So people say, well, how about use SigWin or SUA, which is, of course, the best way to run Unix emulators, right? And the answer is no. This is exactly the wrong thing to do. We don't want to keep trying to adapt this platform to do the things that it's not designed to do. Let's fix the problem the right way, and we can move on. So problem number two is really that on Windows, open source software is insanely hard to build, and it never uses the benefits of the platform. It's just not there. So, it's time to do a little brainstorming. Let's think about what it is that we actually want, and then we can work our way back and say, well, this is how we're going to get that. So what is it exactly that we want? Well, to start with, I want it to work for 32-bit and 64-bit. We're right at we're well into the 64-bit era, and we know that 10 or 12 years from now, we're really not expecting to run a lot of 32-bit software. I mean, 10 years ago, we were still running some 16-bit software. I'm sure somebody was. But now, it's not really happening at all. So we know that we need to make sure that it supports both these. I want to have this work with MSI installers. Now a lot of people come and go, oh, MSIs are rather crappy, the Windows installer sucks, blah, blah, blah. You know, Windows installer has a lot of really good features and then it has a lot of crap nailed on top of that. If we just ignore the stuff that we know we don't need to use and use just the parts of it which make sense and are really well designed, I think we can get away with that. I want it to work with at least Visual Studio 9 and Visual Studio 10. And by virtue of working with two compilers, we know that we can always add a third or a fourth or a fifth later on. And this is really, really important because about 1998, they built that whole PHP build script to use VC6. And it stayed that way for a decade. PHP on Windows was built with a 10-year-old compiler up until about a year and a half ago, or almost 2 years ago. And this is just insane. WinQual, there's a service that Microsoft provides that when a piece of software dies and it crashes in an unusual way, it records that information, sends it off to what they call the Windows Error Reporting Service. And that sends it off and gives anonymized data as to where that application crashed. And Microsoft actually collates that information so that publishers can ask for it. And if they sign their software, they can actually get access to this crash data, which is really great because this is how companies like Adobe find out that Flash crashed, or Reader. And I think that open source developers would benefit from this very heavily. As a matter of fact, I know they would because I've handled a couple of calls from the WinQual folks, and they go, hey, do you know anybody at the FFmpeg project? Because we get a lot of crash data from those guys. And the fact of the matter is that we'd like to be able to get that information back so they can hunt down their bugs. Sign binaries. Now, this is really handy. I mentioned this before. We want to be able to have people sign their binaries so that we know who it is that compiled the software. If you're willing, if you think that open source is good, then the only way that you should be running binaries is knowing that somebody has signed this code. That way you have at least some assurance that they're not trying to spin something by you. Let's put it this way. Nobody signs malware. If we could get this signed code working, this would be really great. Now I know what you're thinking. It's that I can't afford $500 for a certificate. So I've been working over the last year or so talking with certificate authorities, and VeriSign has actually stepped up, and they're offering free, as in no money, as costs nothing, code signing certificates to open source projects. This is really significant. So instead of spending $500 a year, open source projects are going to have access to code signing certificates to sign their code. I think that's pretty damn cool. Updatable. Now this seems like it's trivial, and this is, yeah, of course you'll update. I want my applications to be updatable to the point where I don't have to stop them. I don't have to go, gee, what's going on? I just want to be able to update my applications, not wreck my configuration, and make sure it all works. Shared libraries. Hey, while we're at it, let's get these libraries so they're shared. I want to make sure that if I've got five things using OpenSSL, they're using the same copy of OpenSSL, especially considering that if I get that one copy updated and it fixes some bug hole or whatever, I want to make sure that they all get the same benefit. Source MSIs. So on Unix or Linux and whatnot, we have tarballs. We have TGZ files or BZ files or whatever, where people package up their source code that's great for Linux developers. Now, in Windows, they don't use those tools. So to package up source code in that manner is maybe not the best idea. However, in order to attract Windows developers that may not be comfortable using open source methods at this point, we provide MSIs for the same source code so they can download it, install it like they would anything else, and get access to those so that they can turn around and start contributing to the open source projects themselves. Automatic dependencies. And this goes along with the shared libraries, is we want to make sure that all of our applications, when I say I want to install Apache for Windows, then it goes and gets the things it needs. I don't want to have to think about it. I don't want to have to know about it. I just want it to work. Win side by side. This is a really great piece of technology in Windows that nobody knows how to use. This is a facility that actually solves DLL hell. This allows us to have multiple copies of the same DLL installed in the system so that applications can know which version it is that they need to use. Plus, they can be updated behind the scenes and without stopping the system, even if the DLLs are locked or whatnot. This is really great. This works really, really well. Unfortunately, it's so damn hard to use. The documentation is very accurate, and it's very, very clear, as long as you know exactly how to use it in the first place, which is part of the problem. I spent a lot of time actually trying to figure out how this thing works and how to use it best, and I'm convinced that we can actually make use of this by building some great tools around it. App repositories. I think that it should be possible for different places to publish collections of open source applications, whether that's places like CodePlex or SourceForge or large forges like this, or even individual developers should be able to publish their applications in a way that does not require the permission of Microsoft or does not require anyone's permission or anybody's assent to make it happen. We should be able to pull applications from all these repositories as transparently as pulling from one. I think it should be easily automatable between using things like the command line or scripting or whatnot. I'd like to be able to see it so that hosters or people with large deployments can install Apache on 1,000 Windows machines with a couple of lines of script. It should be that simple. There's no reason why it can't be. A large selection of apps. There's 28,000 apps in Ubuntu. Let's see if we can at least hit that mark first, and we'll see where we go from there. And then one of the things that actually occurred to me yesterday is I didn't mention this a lot, is that I want to get rid of reboots. Right? This is probably the stupidest thing I see on Windows today. There is absolutely no reason to reboot the OS for applications that you download. I mean, never. I know this because I already know how to make this make installers work so that you never have to reboot. It's really ridiculous. And so this is this one I'm going to start putting at the top. No reboots. That's what I should have just called it. No reboots. And it's very important. There's no reason to actually stop the system. Even video drivers can be replaced in place. Like, what are we doing? Why is this still a problem? It's not. So how do we get all that? So we have to sit down and go, well, okay, that was a lot of things we'd like. How do we actually make all that happen? Well, we need to build some sort of common open source application publishing platform. This one. And what does that entail? It really entails a package management system, some tools to actually make those packages, and then some packages to kickstart it all. Kind of clever, hey? One needs the next. So the first thing we got to do is, remember, man, the first hit's free. So a package management system. Now, if you've used Linux, which I'm sure some of you may have encountered once or twice, this should look very familiar, right? A package management system is basically some sort of installer, a shared library manager, and a package repository. So let's just take a quick look at what that would look like. So we have this package installer. And what does it go off and do? It goes off and it calls some sort of repository directory, someplace that says this is where all the different repositories are. And we're going to make that an Atom feed, because Atom is a nice format, and it's pretty easy to actually encode our data up there. Plus, existing tools will be able to look at that and make some sense of it. So it grabs back that Atom feed, and it pulls it down to the client, and it looks through it and generates this list of the different places where I'm going to be able to go and find software. So the system goes off, and it talks to each of those individual repositories and goes, hey, what do you have for software? Tell me about it, and tell me what their dependencies are and stuff like that. And so they all each have this Atom feed as well that it just spits back. Again, this is really beneficial because existing tools like browsers and whatnot can consume Atom feeds and give us useful information. So it grabs those Atom feeds back. It brings all the data together. It generates one nice large list of all the packages that I can install. So then I want to actually go and install them. And it goes off and it talks to the repository and goes, hey, I'd like to grab Apache or whatever it is I'm installing. So it grabs that package and gets it down. It also notes that it needs to grab a few other packages in order to satisfy its dependencies. So it turns around, grabs all of those, and downloads them as well. And then it turns around and installs them and makes sure it's got the right order and dependencies and versions, makes sure it's consistent, sanity checked, and that it's all updatable. Now, some of that's just implicit in the system. So then we have this service that runs one for the whole system rather than one per piece of software that we install, that actually monitors those repositories to ensure that we can get the updates that are required. So if an update comes out for OpenSSL and that gets published, we get it as fast as possible. Right? We don't have to wait for 6 months for someone to patch the one that came with the app that I downloaded. So the next thing, of course, we're going to need is some tools. Did I mention some tools? We need to build some tools to assist developers in properly adapting to Windows. All what I've talked about right now is actually achievable in a with a little bit of effort. Unfortunately, that effort is often painful. So when I was working on PHP and I developed this process for actually building a better PHP, it's kind of neat because I started with the source code and I wrote some tools to do some analysis, and it turns out it actually generates brand new Visual Studio project files, which then I automated this build and built this optimized system for optimizing it, which turned around packages it and gives us something we can publish. Hey, that's great. Can we do this for all open source? The answer is sure, why not? And so how do we do that? The first step is we actually shallow fork the original code. So Ubuntu already does this. They actually maintain shallow forks of all their code to put all the packages that they put into Ubuntu. They take the code and they say, okay, what changes do we need to make sure that are there just to make sure that it's working great? They feed any significant changes back upstream, but they always maintain this shallow fork that they continually merge in from upstream to make sure that they've got the best package experience for their version of Linux. So the next thing we have to do is actually turn around and inspect that code. And so we have some tools that go through it and find all the things out that it needs to know. It looks at the C++, the makefiles, and it's going to record that information in a nice little XML file that we can use later. The second thing we do is we actually trace the code as it builds. Now, I built a tool to do this a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago, that actually, no matter how it is that we actually currently can get it to build, no matter how painful it is, we can monitor that process and find out every file it touches, every file it generates, everything about the whole build process, and from there, we record all that information in some XML files, and we'll turn around and use it in our next step. So, this laptop, not so fast. So anyhow, we watch it as it builds, we record that information, and we store it for later. The next thing we need to do is actually capture the things that we know. So as a developer, I'm looking at the source code for zlib, and I notice some things, or I make some changes, or I want to make sure that I just write down the things and be able to store that in a way that we can use that with one of our tools. So next step, we actually grab all of these things. We spit them through another little tool that we write called MakeSpec, which spins it all up and generates out what I call spec files, which is basically a compiler-independent way of saying, this is how you build this, and this is what you should be getting out of it. We turn around, we have another tool that generates some project files based on that. And the great part is that when we want to actually turn around and do this for another compiler, we just swap out this tool, and we add some code to this particular tool. Now, we build it using profile-guided optimization so that we actually spit it through the code through the compiler, and it does this magical stuff. Now, profile-guided optimization is kind of interesting because basically you instrument this binary, and it comes out, and then you can actually run it, step six, which is automate some training scenarios. And so you actually turn around and you run it as if you're running it in production. So you run some real-world apps. When I did this with PHP, I used Drupal and WordPress and PHPVB and a few other apps. And so I all ran it through here. And the great part is, at the end of this process, I actually got out a version of PHP that on Windows was about 20-25% faster than without using profile-guided optimization. which was what they're still using today. And so then we turn around and we relink it with all that data that we gather. We turn around and we run it through the linker again, and it makes a lot better choices when it comes to generating that code out, and it spits out this higher performing binary. And then we have some tools that generate and embed the manifests for side by side so that the developer doesn't have to make choices as, I don't remember which version. No. We know what version you're compiling with. We know how to tell the compiler this is the one that he used. We mark up the executables in the right way so that all of this information is embedded transparently. It doesn't require any extra effort. And so those are attached to the binary, blah, blah, blah. Then, of course, we want to digitally sign these binaries so somebody knows what it is that we've actually built and who it is that was responsible for this compiling. So we actually run them through and generate our digital signatures and embed that in the binary as well so that people know who is responsible. And then we turn around and we package up with Wix, which is an open source tool for generating installers for Windows. We feed all this data back through there and we generate up a couple of installers, one for the source and one for the binary. And then the next thing, we copy these to the repository, and so we just drag them over to our folder. Boy, is that the fastest you've ever seen? It's funny. Anyway, and then finally we update our Atom feed, which is pretty trivial to do as well because Atom's a well-known format. And it does have, you know, obviously we're going to have to add some fields to that, but that's good because that's what Atom's good for. And then finally, we're going to turn around, we're going to bootstrap the ecosystem by adopting some strategically important apps. So the folks where I work at Microsoft, they've been so gracious to let me actually work on this project full time. They're interested in seeing certain kinds of applications actually built. And so the first things we're going to start with is things like PHP, Apache, and Python, which are really important because these applications have a nice set of dependencies. And if we can build these and all of their dependencies, which is a few, this turns out to be a very large number of the dependencies for just about everything else. Once I've got these all packaged up and running so that they're easy to consume, updatable, and do all the fancy, smancy things that we've been talking about, this significantly lowers the bar for more open source applications on Windows. No longer will someone have to go, how do I get Postgres to install, or how do I get Postgres to compile on Windows, or how do I get this to compile, or how do I get these five things together? You just grab the libraries and away you go. So what's our plan? So people keep asking me, so how is this all working out? So I've got this extremely detailed and high-resolution project timeline that talks about exactly what we're doing. So we've actually completed our basic specification for our packages at this point, and we're now working on our developer tools as a community. And there's going to be a point where we're going to get to the point where we can actually start making some packages, which will be sometime this fall, I anticipate. And then there'll be some point where we're actually finished the developer tools, who knows when. Anyway, so we get some packages, and so sometime in the spring, I expect that we'll actually start seeing some of the packages for PHP and Apache and Python and other things that open source community is actually interested in. And then we'll have the client tools actually appearing a bit later so that you'll be able to use this stuff from either the command line or as a nice, pretty GUI. So, no, very cool and all. And so the CoApp project is actually a CodePlex Foundation project that Microsoft participates in. I think this is extremely important to note that Microsoft does not own CoApp. Microsoft pays me to work on it full time. However, the project is owned by me and the other committers. We are actually all just doing this for ourselves, really. So the great part is Microsoft does not own this. They don't control it. They can't even tell me how to build it. The only thing they really can do is say, we're not going to pay you any longer to work on it. It's too late for that, though. So the CoApp community actually owns the responsibility of maintaining the tools, packages, and repositories. So people who join our community, which is as easy as going and coming out and going, hey, I'd like to work on something, these are the people that are actually responsible. In the same way that the vast majority of the packages in the Linux world are basically maintained by the community. And so get involved. I would love to have more people working on a project. We've got about a dozen committers right now and about 130 people on our mailing list, and you can come and see us at coapp.org, which is a great place to start, and you can follow my Twitter feed at FearTheCowboy. And where I constantly am updating about what it is we're doing. And that, excuse me, is my presentation.